Hello, and welcome to the Business Behind Small Business, the show that reminds you that just because you own a business doesn't mean you are a business owner. In each episode, we will discuss a common issue small businesses face and offer tips and advice from the perspectives of two business owners, one that built to sell and one that built to inherit. We are your hosts, Savannah Stone and Chloe Lee. There's a lot of business behind small business, so let's get to it. Oftentimes, when we network, we rarely see it as a relationship or even take the communication to that level. That type of intimate interaction is usually reserved for our friends, partners, and family. But what if you were to look at a networking or professional relationship as though you both were in it for the long haul? Would it change how you approach other professionals in a networking setting? Do you feel there is a benefit to long-term professional relationships? Let's explore, shall we? Before we begin, please note our disclaimer. This is available in both our show notes and on our website and should be referred to before and or after this podcast.
So I'm going to start today by using a quote said by Tim Sanders. He's a New York Times bestselling author and a former executive of Yahoo. He coined this phrase, "Your network is your net worth." Now, what does this mean? It means the mindset that you should have, according to Porter Gale, who has a book titled by this exact same line, is as such. And I quote, "Your social capital or your ability to build a network of authentic personal and professional relationships and not your financial capital is the most important asset in your portfolio. Seeking out and working in collaboration with others who share your interests and values will provide a stronger foundation, enabling you to reach a higher level of success than you would on your own. Therefore, your net worth will be based not on the size of your portfolio or the size of your network, but on your ability to define and stay true to your passions and values, and that working with other people who share them will allow you to build a strong and enduring interpersonal safety net that will carry you through any financial calamity to greater output and personal fulfillment." So, what does that look like in reality? Well, for one, long-term relationships are not transactional, meaning you don't form a relationship as a means to an end, such as just to solely sell your product or service. Instead, you form relationships to see how you can help the other person. Now, Porter Gale, the author that I was quoting earlier, he coined a phrase called give, give, get, which means that you will want to give more than what you're receiving as you're investing in a relationship, or as Stephen Covey, author of 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, puts it, you want to put deposits in their emotional bank account. Second, since long-term relationships are built on trust, you have to be genuine, you want to be authentic, and you want to actually be interested in the relationship. It's hard to be in a relationship with someone that you don't like, nor is it fair for you to have to fake it all the time, or for you to be on the receiving end of somebody else who's faking it. A relationship only works when care and trust flows both ways. Now, does that mean that you ignore people that you don't like?
Yes.
Well,
no, sorry.
Your initial response may be yes. And depending on how many people are on your blacklist, it may not be the most wisest move for you, especially professionally. But there are ways you can be respectful without crossing the line and being disingenuous in your interactions with those that you just don't really vibe with. Last, a long-term relationship is exactly that, long-term, which means it has to be nurtured over a period of time. So you'll want to invest some thought into how to keep it up over time. Maybe that means a direct and personable text every once in a while, or an email here from there, or maybe you invite them to events you truly believe that they would enjoy attending with you. Another way to do it is also have coffee every once in a while and put that as a regular event to go to on your calendar. In any scenario, what you want to do is you want to take the time to proactively grow a relationship.
I agree. I spent a lot of time in the beginning of my company's infancy in creating steps instead of foundations. If I don't know if that makes any sense, but I'll get to it. I didn't put much effort into connections, and I didn't realize how important they were until it began to happen organically. I found that there were certain people I genuinely liked to speak to, what you were just mentioning, and over time became first in my mind when I needed to refer someone. Eventually, I found the long-term connections became the core of my success, and at the very least, the climb. In saying that, I did find that certain people fit into certain categories, and that helped in shaping my relationships. There were people I could definitely get or give clients to, and then there were those who were super connectors. Lastly, there were those whom I knew I couldn't get or give business to, but they were so knowledgeable, they fell into a more mentor-like role. Approaching our connections in this manner and knowing that each of those buckets, if you will, require a different level of communication and a different type of curation. So, like, you know, there are some people that you might want to go out for coffee with, and then there might be some people that are more you want to go out for wine with. And then there are some that are a little more buttoned up and maybe you just want to do like a Zoom call or a phone call with, or lunch. You know the person, you know what kind of, what their love language is, if you will, and speak to that. You'll find that they will begin to recognize their potential and importance to you. And frankly, what your importance and role is to them, what their role is to you and how they can benefit from it. So speaking of wine and coffee and all the things in between, these are ways, as in having breakfast, lunch, dinner, coffee, whatever it may be, that show you care about the relationship. You're serious about your role in the relationship and have no intention of wasting their or your time. Good relationships, long-lasting relationships need nurturing. So don't only reach out to these people when you need them. Reach out when you think of them. This is a real relationship you're working on. No, it's not a dating relationship, but it is a relationship that teeters on professional and personal, business champion and friend. With that said, choose these people wisely. I kind of fell into these relationships because I approached them firstly as a, I really like you way, and knew I wanted to align myself with them, which is fine if that's the approach that works best for you too. But you don't want to come off as using someone. You should truly enjoy their company. Maybe getting together doesn't always work out, and maybe your love language is social media, which is fine. However, I felt the Harvard Business Review defined this approach so well. In the information age, you can easily stay connected to people from your past for digital eternity, but an over-reliance on social media to maintain your professional network can be dangerous. Just like a phone call is not the same as conversing in person, social media has a different level of fidelity. Sometimes social media tricks us into believing we have a strong connection with someone when, in fact, that connection only exists in that single plane of existence. Still, you can use social media to your advantage. You might, for instance, trade direct messages with your contacts on Twitter, repost content they've created on LinkedIn, or retweet blogs and articles they've highlighted. Even better, take the conversation offline. If you notice that your friend was just promoted or had some other success, celebrate her win by giving her a call or sending her a note. The source will be in our show notes for this if you would like to read more about it. Keep in mind that this is meant to be a special circle of friends / professionals and should develop organically. In other words, don't force it. You know when a relationship has potential and when it doesn't. Also, remember that this is not a forced process and isn't meant to be a constant thing. No different than your personal relationships, your professional connections should be organic and simple touch bases every now and then. Keep them top of mind when you have a referral or suggestion to make to someone or a client, and let your connected professional know that you are thinking of them and are sending them a client, if that's the cause for the reach out. There's no true science to this, but there are social rules, as there are in any relationship. Following the unwritten social rules of our society will keep this relationship in a healthy place, and your professional relationship will last for many years to come. So,
well put.
Yeah, thanks. I thought so. How did we create our long-term networking relationships? Let's talk a little bit about that. What did we gain from them?
So I'm going to go back to a quote by Paul Tashima, who is actually going to be my famous example. So I'll go into a little bit deeper detail who he is and what he did. But he gave an interview in entrepreneur.com where he quoted, well, he rather answered a question about why he's doing a second startup after a very successful exit of his first. And his answer was, I think if you were to ask any successful startup person, they would say that the best part of building a billion-dollar company is working with the team that you get and the customers that you get. It's all about the relationships you build on a journey, even if you fail. So as somebody who is currently kind of working my way up to my second startup now, I am actually pretty excited to do it all over again, which sounds a little, you know, odd when you think about how much work that goes into actually starting up a company from scratch. My sentiment is very similar to that of Paul's, even though I personally am not talking about a $1 billion company as my first company exit, but I would certainly welcome the opportunity at any time. But I really truly love the stories and the people in the stories that I had the privilege to experience when I built my own company and the ones that I'll experience when I build my new company. Mm-hmm. So I would only say that I would qualify that sentiment because I'm not sure if I had the same joyous feelings about my customers or my employees or whoever is causing me the biggest headache and problem at a certain point in time, especially in the first 3 to 4 years of my first startup, because, you know, I was just trying to learn everything and everything seemed like a problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they say that if you go around looking for a problem, you'll just find more problems. And that is so true.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, the first 3 to 4 years of the business, you know, I was just focused on just surviving the journey rather than enjoying the journey. And mm-hmm. I have to say that now I'm in a position to actually enjoy it. I very much look forward to it and all the people that's going to, you know, come along with that journey.
So when I first started my company, I was the only person doing everything. And to be honest, it was also a whole new world for me because I was kind of new to the area as well. So I had to get to know people here and I had to get to know what it was to do business here. So everyone that I met, including you, I was like, friend, maybe not friend, friend, maybe friend. Maybe not friend. You know, like it was a little bit of this, that, and some people remained friends like you. And some people we just kind of, I was like, I'll be on one side of the room. You can be on the other.
literally sometimes.
Yeah, literally sometimes. Yeah. So, and the same also went for some of my clients. Some of my clients became actual friends of mine. Some of my clients who are still my clients are friends of mine, as well as being my clients. And other opportunities opened themselves up over the years because of our relationship. Now, some of these professional relationships, we would either always do coffee or we would always do wine or we would always do going out for dinner or something like that. It's just the kind of relationship that we had. And then there are some that we don't do more than maybe text every now and then or send an email every now and then. You know, I know the difference between the ones that are kind of more buttoned up and the ones that are we can let loose a little bit more on. And every one of these relationships, it's not that I was looking for opportunities, but opportunities did present themselves because of these relationships. And, you know, and I'm talking about some that I've had for, you know, 10, 11 years at this point, since the inception of my company. And some of the opportunities that came out of it was either more business. I, at one point, was part of a networking organization. I was a partner in a networking organization. This podcast came out of that. You know, a lot of different things came out of it. A lot of great opportunities. I wasn't necessarily looking for them because I cared more about the relationship than the opportunity that was going to come out of the relationship. But, you know, in some cases, they also became more like mentors to me, which has also been fantastic. So you're not going to lose by investing time in these kinds of relationships. At least I don't know how you could. I don't see the downside to it.
I agree with you there. As somebody who is who hasn't networked in quite a few years, or actually hasn't been to a networking event. I can't say that I haven't networked, but haven't been to a networking event for a few years now, probably a good solid 5 years, including the COVID years in there.
Yeah.
And as someone, which I would be the first to say, I am an introvert at heart, although if anybody's ever met me in a networking event would think that I'm an extrovert, because that's just kind of where I can kind of draw the energy when I'm in a room like that.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to try to shy away from people. Like, that's my nature. Mm-hmm. I just think that it gets complex, and it's hard to keep up with the relationship, and just draws a lot of energy from me, because my energy comes from being in solitude.
Yeah.
Mostly. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think with my first business, I just never really appreciated how much opportunity you're kind of leaving on the table if you're not thoughtfully spending time and nurturing the relationships that you want.
Yeah.
That kind of surrounds your business. And I will say too, like, you know, even with my second business now, or building up my second business, and now I'm like, you know, re-entering, you know, selectively curated networking events, you find familiar faces.
Mm-hmm.
Other business owners that you met previously who are on their second iteration of their second company as well. So that's also to say that it's also a very small world out there.
Mm-hmm.
You may not think it is, but it's very small. People are very much interconnected. And so you just want to be mindful of that.
Yeah. And the one thing I don't know that either of us mentioned this, but the benefit, the added benefit of having these kinds of relationships as well, especially when they become, when they reach the threshold of going to a more personal space, is that not too many people know what your journey is like, right? And when you have these kinds of relationships, and especially somebody that you feel comfortable to talk to about business and the difficulties that you experience, that person likely has experienced the same kind of difficulties. And it's nice to be able to talk to somebody about challenges and difficulties that understands what you're going through, because they've gone through the same thing. Or maybe there's something that you want to use them as a soundboard for. Maybe they want to use you as a soundboard. It's nice to have that kind of relationship, to talk to somebody who truly understands you and knows what you're going through, as well as like all of the other added benefits.
Well, I definitely agree with you there.
Mm-hmm. In each episode, we like to connect a famous example to our discussion to help you relate our talking points on a more global or well-recognized scale. Sometimes we use exact examples of either famous persons or successful business owners of today or in history. And sometimes we use examples of people who inspire us and have inspired today's discussion. And so who are we going to learn about today?
Well, so according to an article by American Writers and Artists Institute, Paul Tashima, who I was referencing a little bit earlier, he is the co-founder of a Canadian marketing data company called Eloqua. And he wanted to sell his business. And so he turned to his network of contacts to find a buyer. Well, fortunately, over the years, Paul has taken a time to actually make friends with people who worked at Oracle, the cloud computing software firm. And when they found out that he was interested in selling his business, a few phone calls were made. And the next thing you know, he's talking to Oracle's management company. Then in 2012, Paul struck a deal with Oracle in which he sold his company for $871 million.
Heavens.
That is more than 200% of the company's estimated market value. And that probably wouldn't have happened if Paul didn't rely on his network and had thoughtfully built up his networking connections over the years.
Goodness.
So if you want to put a value on having good relationships and good networking skills, then I would say that's a good story to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
That is.
So, you know, funny enough, it's pretty similar to how I ended up finding the buyer for my business.
Yeah.
It was through a networking group, a networking contact. I had mentioned the fact that actually I was just interested in talking to somebody in my industry. And somebody made a phone call to somebody else and connected us. And over lunch, we talked. And it was nothing about a sale of a company. But when we had talked to the point about the goals for our company, I had mentioned that my goal is to, you know, make my company sellable and actually sell it. And a few months later, I sold the company.
Man, look at that. You know, I've always valued the relationships that I have with the people that I meet in certain people that I meet in networking, but also with my clients and even some of the people that, you know, work for me that I work with. Those relationships are immeasurable in ways that you don't know what amazing things might come out of it. But, you know, so I'm going to jump directly into a mentor-mentee relationship that I think made a huge impact on the result of, well, what we ended up with. When you hear the names Mark Zuckerberg and Steve Jobs, you immediately think Facebook and iPhone, respectively. You certainly wouldn't automatically think, oh, one of the most famous professional relationships in modern history, would you? Well, early in Mark's career, he started turning heads with his world-changing idea and technology. One such head was Steve Jobs. The Apple founder and Facebook creator admired one another's work, even though in some ways they were in direct competition with one another. Mark reached out to Steve to glean real-world insight from him as he created a thing that didn't truly have a blueprint as to how it would affect society permanently. Seeing as Steve had done such a thing with Apple, it made sense for Zuckerberg to seek guidance. Steve openly admired the Facebook's founder. In Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson, the Apple founder said that he admired Zuckerberg for not wanting to sell the company and instead keep working on what he started. In other words, Jobs saw a lot of himself in Zuckerberg, a young kid out to change the world. The two would often go for long afternoon walks around Palo Alto and developed a strong friendship despite their rivalry. They had very similar values, and according to Zuckerberg, Jobs advised him on how to focus his company and build the right management team with people who had similar ideas as he did. Early on in our history, when things weren't really going well, we had hit a tough patch and a lot of people wanted to buy Facebook. I went and I met with Steve Jobs, and he said that to reconnect with what I believed was the mission of the company, I should go visit this temple in India that he had gone to early in the evolution of Apple when he was thinking about what he wanted his vision of the future to be, Zuckerberg said, according to Business Insider. Zuckerberg visited the temple and traveled around India for a month and saw how people in India connected with each other, affirming his sense of Facebook's mission. This close relationship grew Zuckerberg's ability to see the future and grow his projects. When Steve Jobs passed away in 2011, Mark Zuckerberg posted, "Steve, thank you for being a mentor and a friend. Thanks for showing that what you build can change the world. I will miss you."
That's so sweet. I actually didn't realize they had such a close friendship, but I mean, heavens, the universe put together two really genius people.
Oh yeah. Well, I had no idea, and neither did anyone in the public. It wasn't until Mark Zuckerberg had posted that that update, or you know, he had posted it when Steve Jobs passed away, that anyone knew that there was a relationship between the two of them.
And I think that's exactly what I think about too, when I'm saying that if you turn off or shy away from nurturing relationships, these are the types of opportunities you're leaving on the table.
Yep, I agree. With each episode, we like to share either books, tools, apps, platforms, or anything we think is a great next step and connector to our discussion. So if you like our subject matter and want to learn more, you'll have a great place to start.
All right. So my recommendations are in a couple forms. One is a book by Porter Gale. He's somebody I referenced a little bit earlier. His book is called Your Network is Your Net Worth. Unlock the hidden power of connections for wealth, success, and happiness in a digital age. The same author also wrote a great article on the same topic in Huffington Post, which will be linked in the show notes below. So definitely check that out. Another classic book I want to recommend is by Dale Carnegie. Of course, it's been around for some time. It's called How to Win Friends and Influence People. I think those give you some really, you know, basic foundations to just interacting with others. And then a couple other articles I wanted to recommend on the internet. One is from medium.com. And again, it'll be linked in the show notes. And it'll give you some good pointers as to how to network as an introvert. And then last, Paul Tsushima, which was my famous example, he gave some really good tips in his entrepreneur.com article. So we'll go ahead and link that in our show notes as well. And definitely check that out and make sure you read the full article. Sounds like a great guy who had a great opportunity, built a great business, had a good exit, and is at it again. So we can probably learn a few things from his experience.
Yeah, definitely. I actually have two articles that I recommend you read about how to build these types of relationships. And Chloe will share these in our show notes. I also think it's important to understand inner communication. This is essential to deepen your understanding of how to communicate. And from there, how to deepen your relationship. I suggest you start with Simply Said, Communicating Better at Work and Beyond. It's a paperback by Jay Sullivan. This book focuses on your inner communication in the workplace and how to best build relationships, and of course, how to pivot your communication style accordingly. Another book I suggest is It's How You Say It, Effective Business Communication Skills by Barbara, I believe it's Tyker. I'm sorry, Barbara. Before you seek out a professional relationship, it's important to know how to communicate and how to change your communication style and when to do so. Having a background in inner communication, I find that this is extremely important, especially as you seek to grow your business. Do it well and you will find your company will grow exponentially. Do it wrong and you'll earn a reputation for being the one to avoid at the next networking event. And we all know people like that. So do you want to do your best to be on the positive side of that? But really, I've always said, and it's not just because of my background in inner communication, I've always believed that inner communication must be understood before you go into any event, before you even start your business, because you need to know how to talk to people and how to say the right things to certain types of people, because not everybody is going to hear you in the way that you expect them to hear you. So knowing what to say and who to say it to will do you well over the years. Please join us for our next episode where we will discuss digital marketing, what works for each stage of your growth. Please show us your support by following us on your preferred podcast platform, social media, and YouTube. We'd love for you to also share our episodes. All of our links are posted below. Until next time, mind your business behind your small business.